with us, amazing Paul Tinker, who leads Construction Training Academy. He is absolutely amazing, mainly because very few people in the world actually are fantastic, irrespective of what's happening in their life. And Paul is one of them. Absolute inspiration. Honor to have you here, buddy.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
So tell us, where did your journey start? Like, how did you get into construction in the first place?
Oh, this could take some time. I kind of fell into it. So I was in the military for 14 years. I was a Royal Engineer. So my trade in the Royal Engineers was bricklayer. And when I decided I was going to leave the military, it was because of a woman, by the way, a girl I was seeing at the time. I thought, yeah, that's it. I'll leave the army. And when you leave the military, they put you on this, what they call a CTW, which is a career transition workshop, where they basically teach you to become a civilian. Now, in these workshops, they say to you, what do you want to do when you leave? And like, I was leaving for a girl. I'd not even thought that far ahead. It was like, I don't really know. So I'm sat in this seminar, and the guy, the instructor was going around the room, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? What are you going to do? And the guy sat next to me, a guy called Joe, he said, I'm going to go into construction management. And I went, fuck it, I'll do that. And the guy said to me, what are you going to do, Paul? And I went, I'm going to be into construction management. And that was how I fell into the industry. Now, weirdly, Joe and I were both from the same place. And we both applied for the same job whilst we was on this course. And I got the job and he didn't. And he still chins at me to this day about it. Yeah. So that's how I ended up in construction management. And then so I went into the corporate space of construction management. Then it went up to project management, then up to operations management. And then I threw my corporate towel in 2018 to set up my own business. And then really I grew from there. That's how I ended
up in the game. Fantastic. I mean, one thing I've observed is, and correct me if I'm wrong there, most people who come from army background, they tend to be more successful. It's actually statistically proven that when you come from an army background, the likelihood of you succeeding in business is very, very high. In fact, a few 100% over. Why do you think that is? What is it that you learn as a military man?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I do agree with you. And I think I only learned the answer to this recently. I was doing a business training myself, and the guy put something up on the board that really resonated with me. And he said, this is what he said. I think he got it off Tony Robbins actually, but this is the phrase that he said was, any route to success, the two inputs are structure and discipline. And when you really think about that, like that is so true about everything, like weight loss, diet, stopping drinking, business success, income, making a sale, whatever that is, if that success is the output, then the input is always structure and discipline. So having a plan and sticking to it. Now, because of that, to answer your question about why I think military men and women are successful when they go into business, is because of that, because structure and discipline is ingrained into our life.
Yeah.
Like not just the working day, your whole life. You're told when to have breakfast. You're told when to have dinner. You're told when you've got to get dressed. You're told when you've got to be somewhere. You're told when you've got to have a shit. You're told like you will do this at this time on this day, like constantly. That's like, and I did that for 14 years every single day. And that, you know, there's no getting away from that. That just becomes who you are.
Yeah.
And because of that, it just makes you so driven and consistent and just getting after it all the time.
Yep. I do think that there are at least three traits that I can think about on top of my head, which are like non-negotiable if anyone wants to succeed, which is discipline, systems, structures, very much correlated.
Yeah.
And I also feel creativity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And one thing I learned a long time ago from one of my clients, he was actually the chairman of a listed company, a multi-billion pound company. We were having a discussion over this, that can you actually be more creative by reading and observing and learning from your mentors? And his missus said, I don't think you can be more creative than how you're genetically born, like the nature and the nurture argument. And he said, no, if you read and if you surround yourself with the right people and I think you can be a lot more creative, but maybe you can add to this list. What do you think are the bigger reasons, the major reasons
No, I totally agree with all three of those. I think creativity, absolutely. Structure and discipline for me is the thing. The only thing I think I would probably add to that would be consistency and persistence. And it sounds so corny to say these words. Yeah. I remember hearing them myself like 4 years ago when I found the personal development space and thinking, shut up, mate. You know, this. It's not about that, but now I know that it is. It's so important. You know, discipline is a really interesting concept for me as well.
Yeah,
I hear people say that, and I think this is where people get discipline wrong as well, by the way. Yeah. So people say, I am disciplined, and they'll say, I'm disciplined. I do everything that, you know, it's in my plan. And so show me your plan. And they don't have one. Like, if you don't have a plan, if you don't have a structure, you cannot be disciplined. It is not possible.
It's just not possible.
Discipline is conformance to a structure. It's conformance to a plan. If the plan doesn't exist, you're not being disciplined to anything.
No.
And therefore, it can't exist. So the two have to be, they have to dovetail.
They have to. You know, it's funny you mentioned, that. I speak with lots of people, right? And one thing I hear a lot is, you know, you give them an idea or you give them some sort of guidance and they say, oh, I know that. And immediately when someone says that, I ask them, have you been implementing? And if the answer is no, well, what? I mean, you don't know that, right? You don't know. It's not about knowing. It's about you actually implementing. I mean, you know, there's a saying, and obviously in personal development spaces, show me your friends and I'll tell you your future. I literally tell people, show me your diary.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you your future.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you actually putting in the work? Are you actually doing the physical work? It's not about knowing. I mean, most of the people know what to do, but how many people actually put in the work that needs to be done? And at the same time, learning to create value in your system by delegating, by bringing creativity into it, and being able to get to a point where you can charge £1,000 to £20,000 a day or £30,000 a day for yourself is where it's at. And have you been doing that? That's what matters.
Absolutely.
It's not about you saying, oh, I know this, and you're working for like £200 a day. That's not where it's at. Maybe you can add something into it.
No, I 100% agree with you. There's nothing more frustrating for me as a trainer when you teach someone something and I already know that. And then my challenge back is always, well, are you implementing? No. So you know this stuff, but you're not doing the work with it. Well, no, it's a lot of hard work. And, you know, it's easier for me to do it this way. But your results will follow that. Like, there's always an easier way, but the easier way doesn't yield the results that you want for doing the thing properly.
No. It just you're doesn't. Right. In fact, I came across something like this the other day. And one of the authors said, he said, If you come across an easy way and a hard way to do it, the likelihood of you, if let's say you were to go for the hard way, the likelihood of you achieving more, a lot more, is a lot more.
Oh, 100%.
So, strangely enough, humans are designed, unless consciously they choose the hard way, they're designed to choose the easy way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, path of least resistance.
Yeah, path of least resistance. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I have maybe learned this psychology. I mean, I remember I was 16, and I remember this is back in India, and we had a day when I had to lead like 21 laborers to do packing of material that would have taken us 3 days. And my dad rung me and he said, "We really need to get this today, like in a single day, 3 days' work. Can you get it done?" And I woke up at 5 o'clock. I was in the warehouse 6 o'clock. I was with 21 laborers till 11 o'clock at night. And this is the month of June. For those who know India, this is heated, like so hot, you can die of heat, 48 degrees Celsius, right? And I remember 11 o'clock, I rung my dad. I said, 3 days work done. I'm just driving down the truck to the warehouse. And this is going to get submitted. It's going to fly off tomorrow morning and all done. And my dad said, you know, I'm so glad. I'm so proud that you've not just managed to do 3 days work. Like, no, I wasn't physically doing anything. All I was doing was managing a team and making sure that they're resourced, right? But this is me at 16. And I remember I'm still very naive and, you know, like a teenager. I was so happy that day, like my dad said, I'm proud of you. Just one of the things that you learn and you kind of reflect back at it.
This path of least resistance that you speak of, and humans doing the easy thing, you know, the marketers of the world really sort of play on that. It's one thing that really gets my goat, listers. You know, I see people advertising like 5-minute abs and the cheat sheet, the download, the easy refurb, the property purchase with no pain. Like, those things do not fucking exist. Like, stop falling for this bullshit. Like, stop buying this stuff. No one gets abs in 5 minutes. They just don't. They don't. Stop falling for it.
I'm going to ask you a very deeper question. Yeah, the problem is, if you wrote down the hard way to make £1,000 a day, you're not going to sell. That's the damn problem. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great. I actually do deal with it. I actually do deal with this in my marketing.
Yeah.
I make no secret and no bones that working with me is fucking hard work. Like, there's no secret. Like, if you want to get the knowledge I have, it is hard. You are going to get battered constantly with information and me hounding you to make sure that it's implemented so that you get the results. Because I don't want anybody coming and doing my training, going away and saying that it was shit or it can't be implemented, it can't be done, it's too hard, or I don't want that. I need to make sure that when someone's done the work, that they've done, got the knowledge, they then put it into place. Otherwise, there was no point in them coming.
So from your observation,
yeah,
for every 100 people that sign up with you,
yeah,
what percentage actually follow through?
Probably about between 15 and 20.
That is the... Okay, here it is. Okay, this is something I've learned and I've experienced, and this is the real truth, okay? 80% of the people are going to do shit. They're going to do nothing with it.
Yeah.
And 20% of the people, depending on how determined they are in their own respective way, they'll follow through.
Yeah.
The question I always ask myself, like a challenge to myself, is how do I get that 80% to follow through to some extent, if not maybe 100%?
Yeah.
I find one way, which maybe you can tell me your way, and I really want to share this with people so they can benefit from this, okay?
Yeah.
The way I look at anything is, and you literally started the session today with that, is...
Yeah.
Set up a structure and a system. And if you have a structure and a system, the likelihood of anyone following through increases by 100-fold.
Yes.
And when people come to me and when I'm guiding them, I always tell them, look, focus on one strategy till you're successful and put a system and a structure in place so you could follow through. And if you don't have that, you could call me back in 15 days or 15 months later, and you would not achieve anything.
Mm.
Okay. What do you do about that?
This is something that I'm working on with the team right now, because it frustrates me so much that it's actually upsetting the team. You know, so the team will say to me, you know, we need to do something about this. We can't let these 80% not do the work, because they hear something else that's really interesting about human behavior. You know, rather than do the work, they would rather leave a great testimonial
and not
to say how good the course was, but then not do anything with it. And I go, mate, I'm really happy that you thought the course was good. What have you done about it? What measures have you put in place in your business so that you can start making more profit from your projects? And it's, oh, well, I ain't really got a project yet. And it's like, bullshit. You don't need to have a project to put these systems in place. Put those systems in place and then go get a project.
Yeah.
Like this whole... It's going to come down to accountability. One of the reasons, and just so you know, I'm being truthful here. This book I'm reading just now, this blue tab, there's one blue tab in this book, which I always do when I get my biggest takeaway from a book.
I've done that book, the one-page marketing plan.
It's fantastic. So I'll just read you a passage. Look, it's highlighted. And the passage that's highlighted, it's the only passage that's highlighted in this book, which is on topic. If I owned a treadmill for a long time, but I haven't lost any weight, does that prove that treadmills don't work? This is obviously a ridiculous conclusion.
That's a great analogy, isn't it?
I love it. I actually highlighted it because I'm going to start using that very line, that very analogy in my marketing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the course, the training that you get from working with us is that treadmill. Like, if you want to lose weight, you've got to get on the fucker. You can't just have the treadmill in the corner looking pretty. No. You've got to get on it and do the hours. You've got to. You know, the guys that work in our highest level product in our mastermind program, they are implementing, they are doing the work, they're working on huge developments. Yeah. And it's amazing to watch. And they still learn. They're still learning all year. You know, we have monthly 2-day training sessions in that group. And we're learning and refining all the time. I'm learning and refining all the time, even now still. All my years in the game and all my years in the industry, we've got to stay current. And in order to stay current, that learning that I'm getting daily on my own projects, in my own business, they get shared with my highest level clients. And then in the next training, but that just makes the course bigger because I've got more to share and more to add. You know, but it's tough getting people to implement. Really, really tough.
Here is a question for you, which is coming from me.
Yeah.
How far do you push someone?
That's an amazing question. It's an amazing question. And my honest answer is to their breaking point. And I genuinely mean that.
Yeah.
And I think that approach, that mindset comes from the military. Like as soon as someone tells me to fuck off, that's it, I'll back off.
Yeah.
Like, but I will take them to that point.
And here is something it's again coming from me, is when someone has signed up to your training and they're paying you, you know, a few thousands, and you push them to almost to that edge, to that breaking point, and they don't like you anymore. But as teachers, as mentors, are they supposed to like us in the first place?
Amazing question again. I'm not there to be liked. You know, if you like me, bonus. But, you know, I'm not there to be anybody's friend. I'm not there to be liked. I'm there to give value and give you what you've paid for. Yeah. You know, when you've bought from me, you're buying my knowledge and experience. You're not buying a friend. Like, if you want to be my mate, take me out for dinner.
Yeah.
You don't need to pay me thousands of pounds for that. You know, the two, you have to get clear on that relationship. I didn't do that at first. When I first hit my training business, I wanted to be liked by everybody. I wanted to be popular. I wanted people to come to me because I was a nice guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was faking it. You know, I wasn't being me. I wasn't being myself. I wasn't being the ex-serviceman that takes people to that point. And I was kind of like not giving all because of that, because I was hiding a part of my personality.
Yeah.
And that was tough.
Here is last question on this thread of the subject, okay?
Yeah.
At what point do you turn up to someone and say, you're being a fucking pussy?
Every day, man, every day.
At what point? I mean, I'm not a person who swears a lot, but when I do swear, I really mean it, because I literally come across people and, you know, I just feel like telling them, you're being a fucking pussy, man. Like, go and put the damn work. You're gonna walk into a fucking gym, and you're gonna tell me you can't fucking bench press 50.
Yeah.
I mean, I am generally a very skinny person, like, but I can go and do 300 kilos, 360 kilos on my legs, and that's because I am fucking driven. And likewise, when I'm in my business, I push myself to a point where I feel like shit. Like, it's almost like I have to increase my tolerance level to be able to grow my business and grow myself in the process. Oh, sorry, actually grow myself in the process, which leads to growing the business. But at what point do you tell a student? I struggle to see that point. I struggle with that balance sometimes. How do you deal with that?
I get worse is probably the wrong word, but I'm becoming more and more yeah, worse is the right word. As I grow, as a trainer and as a business owner, I get worse with that. Like, I want people to get results, and the only way they're going to get results is if I fucking push them.
Yeah.
If I don't push them, they won't get the results. And them getting results is so important to me.
Yeah.
That is within me. You know, that is one of my core values in my business and in myself.
Yeah.
I love adding value, and I love seeing people get results. It is the best feeling ever when a student like fucking nails something. If you know a lady called Lucy and Steph Ingram, they're a couple of ex-Navy leavers. They did the training with me back last year sometime. And they went away. They bought a commercial conversion when they left. And off the top of my head, it's 1.7 million or something. And they're just finishing it. Like, there was the whole time through the program, it's like, fucking do this. And they've absolutely smashed it. And to see now, the result that they've got from doing the work has been so rewarding for me. But again, they've got that military discipline and military structure behind what they're doing, behind everything they're doing. Like, they live in, I always get this wrong, it's either Portsmouth or Plymouth, one or the other. Yep. And they drive all the way up to Hull for our networking event every quarter. Like, that's a long way to come. Yep. But that's the relationship that we've built because of how much they were on it, on the training and in the development that they've done. And like, for me to see that, it's so rewarding. I love to see it.
I think we've conveyed the message.
Yeah,
all right. Okay. So tell us, if let's say someone is doing a refurb project, or if let's say someone is doing a conversion project or a development project, right?
Yeah.
What are the 5 or 10 things to look out for when they're looking for a project, when they're analyzing? What are the things to be more aware of?
Oh, fucking hell. I thought you said we're going to have 45 minutes. Yeah, I could be for hours. No, seriously though. So the first thing, what I believe property investors fail to look at, property investors quite rightly are always interested in the numbers.
Yep.
And so is the builder, but what you have to remember is this relationship that you're about to create with builders and tradesmen is a relationship and not a battle. So it's one of the key takeaways that you get when you learn with us is to learn how to form that relationship,
yep.
And not this battle. You should always go into a project joined up and as client and builder as a team versus the project, and not client versus builder. That relationship is fucking toxic. So when you've looked at the numbers and the numbers work, the next thing to do and consider is logistics. And all property investors that, in my experience, they miss this completely. I'll turn up at a project and go, mate, are you having a fucking laugh? How the fuck am I meant to do this? I looked at one 3 days ago, just around the corner from where I'm sat right now. Guy rings me up, can you come look at this building? Because it's so close. And I knew the guy. I had a quick look with him. I walked up to the property and I went, mate, no, I'm out. And he's like, what do you mean? What do you mean you're out? This property was in the town centre, on a busy road, and the path, what's the English word for sidewalk? Pavement, sorry. I don't know why I went American then. I was listening to the kids, they all say that, sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
And the path, the pavement, was about, I would say about 300 mil wide, so 1 foot wide. Mm-hmm. It was on double yellow lines and traffic lights. Okay. And I had to put a scaffold up to do the roof. I could see the roof was shot straight away. And that's why it was shot, because it is so painful for the builder to do that. So if I've got like 10 inquiries come in and that's one of them, that's just getting dismissed because I'm inviting a load of pain into my world logistically. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've got to sort out road closure, street closure. It's a town centre on a one-way street on traffic lights. Like, there is no diversion to be had with residential properties either side. It's on there's a river just around the corner. So the diversion to get to the properties on the road you'd have to close was like 10 miles. So those logistics and this is more logistics from a logistics perspective now from a builder. Like, how am I going to get my gear off the wagon when it gets delivered? Where do I park my vans for my tools? Where's the skip going to go? The scaffold is going to be a real challenge.
Yeah.
You know, how do I keep kids off it at night? All those things are always like, and they're not afterthoughts. They're never thoughts.
Yep.
Because the knowledge is not there. The knowledge is not there from the investor from a logistical perspective.
Kind of view. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one is mid terraces. Very, very common town centre mid terrace properties. With the again, if you're looking at the externals, we haven't gone inside yet. Yep. Looking at the external of the building, how do we get the scaffold up at the back of the property? Yep. You know, can we park the scaffold wagon outside the front? Can we get our gear off outside the front? Materials, labor, yeah, parking, yeah, vans, skips, scaffold, road closures, all these things.
That is a great point. That is a great point. Yeah. It's a perspective of a builder. Yeah.
No, 100%, mate. Yeah. We look at things completely different to the investor, totally different. I get that the investor looks at numbers.
Yep.
This is dangerous when you don't understand logistics of the build process.
Let me ask you this, Paul. Okay. Mm. And I say this in all my talks, right? And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong there. I always say that it's not about how much, it's almost like builders are going to give you pain. And I'm sharing the developer's perspective, the investor's perspective. The builders are going to give you pain. The question is, you need to find one that's going to give you the least amount of pain.
Yes.
Maybe you can correct me from a builder's perspective. But at the same time, how do people find builders who are genuinely reliable? And yeah, genuinely reliable. I think reliability is a major factor.
It is, mate. Yeah. And this is something I'm working on in my latest book, is finding the right builder. Sorry. So you said finding a builder that's reliable. That's what there was.
Reliable builder. But at the same time, let me add something to this so you can see where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Finding a reliable builder that is cost effective enough to make the project profitable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, total sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So the way that I teach this is when we are looking for a builder, we've got to pick a lane. So many property investors go at a property investment project, which is a professional thing to make money.
Yep.
So it's a commercial project. It's a commercial entity.
Yep.
But this is what they do. They go at that that professional project, that commercial project, but they go at it in an amateur fashion.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is they go to sole traders. They go to the domestic space. They go to people that plaster Mrs. Miggins' ceilings. They go to the tiler that works for cash that they found in a pub. They go to the handyman to change the doors. Like, it's totally counterproductive to look at the quotation price that tradesman's going to give you if it's reliability that you're looking for. Because reliability equals reduction in time. Yeah, would you agree?
Yes. So
if you have a reliable builder that's going to do the whole lot, yes, on the face of it, it will look like it costs more money. Because we look at that price, we go, 20 grand, fucking hell.
Yep.
If I get this and myself, I can do it for 12. Yeah, maybe so. But it might take you 9 months instead of 1 month. And therefore, it was more cost effective to pay the 20 and get it done faster. Now, these commercial entities, these commercial projects that are there to make money, you have to approach them professionally. You need to be getting accredited builders. You need to be getting people that have got a team, that have got staff. Not sole traders with a drive around in their cars with paintbrushes hanging out the window.
Yep.
They are not the right tradesmen for your projects when time and reliability are the deciding factor.
Yep.
So one of the models that we teach, we call it the unicorn model. It is time, cost, and quality. Like, you can't have all three. If you want cheap, which is what your sole traders are, if you want cheap, and yes, they might deliver you a high quality, they'll let you down on time. I guarantee it. Absolutely guarantee it.
You're right. You know, that's my experience.
Yeah, that's what will happen. And that's because we're not going after, we want reliability, but we shop on price.
Yeah.
Like, reliability doesn't come with cheap.
You're right. But where is the balance between, or where is the middle point between making it profitable, but still being able to find a reliable builder?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Where is the balance? You know, it's got to be project specific, of course. And I understand. For me, there's a threshold, and that threshold for me is 65,000. And I found that sweet spot just within my own business, but that's going to vary around the country. For me, above 65K is a more professional project than anything below. So anything below 65K, that's a magic number for me in my business, in my region, in my area, with my supply chain.
How did you come to that figure?
That's a long, long story that I could talk about for hours. But yeah, that's the figure that we arrived at. That, and, okay, and coincidentally now, in my construction business, we don't touch anything that's less than 65K. And here's the reason why. Because anything that's less than 65 grand means that I can't deliver the value and service that I bring to a project because I'm too expensive. So that's why I don't operate in that market. There is a place for that market, for the 20K, 30K refurb. And that place requires a lower, I don't want to use the word standard, but a lower, a more affordable type of contractor. That's probably the best language I can use. But you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But, those types of builders, construction businesses, operating at the below 65K mark, they're the types of builders that I wouldn't put on anything above 65K. And I don't want anybody to take away this number as a magic number for them. This is just what works in our business.
Yeah, it works for you. Yeah. I know what you mean.
You've got to find your own sweet spot.
Fantastic. So
because of that, projects that I buy and by myself, they're all also over that threshold.
Fantastic. Here's another question for you. And I've done this a few times, so I'm aware. But at the same time, we always learn something new. Hmm. What is it a developer or investor needs to be prepared with before they approach a builder? Because no point calling a builder and you don't have the drawings, you don't know what you want.
Yeah.
What is it that you think from a builder's perspective, a person needs to be prepared with before they pick up the phone and take 3, 4, 5 quotations?
Yeah, it's a great question as well. And again, this comes down to the type of builder that you're engaging. Like if you're going after the Mrs. Miggins type tradesmen, sole traders, painters with paintbrushes and rollers hanging out the window. Yeah. If you're going for those type of tradesmen, you turn up with a program and a specification, they're going to go, what is this guy on?
What is this?
What is this joker doing?
Yeah.
Like, but if you're operating in the space that I operate in, 65K plus in my example, but anything like of significant spend, as a bare minimum, I won't even talk to somebody now unless they have a specification set of drawings as a bare minimum. Mm-hmm. And then at least an expectation in terms of time. So a program of works would be perfect, but an expectation in terms of time. And what I mean by that is some real basic understanding of when you want me to start and how long you've got in your budget for me to deliver the project. Because that's important because we can do a lot of work together where we're putting in specs, we're putting in prices, and you say to me, and I need it started on the 5th of February, and I go, fuck off, what, you mean in 23, mate? Because that's not happening this year. And then it's all out the window, it was all a waste of time. So those expectations in terms of time have to be communicated. And also, here's another thing. I know everybody disagrees with me. Your budget has to be shared. Yep. If you don't share your budget with your builder, there is no comeback when you go over it.
Yep.
Because the budget never existed. How can a builder go over a budget that he didn't know what it was in the first place?
Yeah.
I hear that complaint a lot. My builder went over budget. He spent too much. And it's like, listen, mate. When you last went to Tesco and you walked around and filled your trolley and got to the checkout and the checkout, she swiped everything through and said that'll be 124 quid. And you say, you've gone over my budget. I've only got 100. And that's what happens.
That is a great analogy. Thank
you. It's so true. That is insane. You went over my budget. What fucking budget? You never told me what the budget was.
You didn't tell me what the budget was. You know, I always say, the more detailed you are, the more likelihood of you, running a profitable business and a project, and the less detailed you are, you're going down the drain if you're not detailed.
100%. 100%. Lack of detail will kill you.
Yeah, exactly. So detail is very much the key, especially when you're doing a project like that, a refurb or a conversion or a development. You need to be really detailed. I mean, like I said, we've done a few, and I am blown away with the amount of detail sometimes it requires. And most people massively underestimate that. It's almost like, you know, I heard this a lot. I mean, I read this a long time ago where, you know, someone said, if you were cutting a tree and you got 6 hours, I'm going to spend 4 hours to sharpen my saw because it's going to only take me 2. Likewise, if you are doing a project, and maybe you can add to this, or if you can, you can maybe correct me if I'm wrong, spend time planning the damn thing in detail. Because if you're going to go to a builder and you're going to give them not enough detail, you will get pain. You will get pain. There's 100%. No way. So maybe you can, maybe you would share your thoughts on this and maybe add something if you have something to add.
You're absolutely right, mate. I'll share a pain a client of mine's got as we speak right now. So we're working for a client just now, and the it was last March we priced it up. Obviously, COVID happened, prices have changed, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we stalled signing contracts until Christmas, us as a business.
Yep.
The guy was really keen and he wanted to lock me into the price that we'd done.
Yep.
So the 20th of December, I said to him, look, appreciate that you want to move ahead. We've agreed a price. You've agreed my quote at 200K. I need to reprice it. And he was like, what do you mean you need to reprice it? You're supposed to be starting in January. So look, we will start in January, but you know what's happening in the industry, blah, blah. And he's like, look, just sign it. We'll deal with any variations as we get along. And I was like, I'm not going to do that to you because I know that this price is going to go up and you need to be in a position to make a decision now and not in January once we've started, because then you're fucked. Yeah. And he said, right, okay, reprice it for me. So we got it repriced, sent it back to our QS, who sent it back, did a bit of jiggery pokery, a bit of value engineering, and it came back at 218. So the price had gone up by 18K. So it's like 9%, which was okay. You could stomach it. So he said, right, let's sign. I said, look, we haven't finalized the specification or anything. And he said, right, well, all the specification items, the second fix items, let's leave them till later. We'll deal with it using the change process. And I said, look, mate, we can do that by all means if you're comfortable with it. But just know this, I don't want you, when we put our price in for the bathrooms, et cetera, and you saying I'm going out to market for three quotes because you're going to piss me off. And he was like, right, okay. And I could see he was a bit uncomfortable with this now. But this is all because he hasn't done the work up front. He hasn't done that spec that he needs to do in advance. He was so keen, get started. And that is such a fucking huge mistake. Like, and I told him this. We went on so many calls and so many Zooms and site meetings. And anyway, we changed the contracts and left all the spec in the air. So now he's got a price of £218,000, which is a lot of fucking money, by the way.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what he's getting for that money. There is no spec whatsoever. Like, we've got lots and lots of what we call a provisional sum in there, which is just guesswork.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the bathrooms arriving on site and we say to him, look, what bathroom do you want? And he says, I want this one, and it's 2K. And we have to look at our quote and go, look, we had 500 quid in for the bathroom.
Yeah.
So this is another £1,500 that you're now going to have to put on your costs because you were lazy up front. Yeah. So that level of detail is so important. I can't tell you how important it is.
Yeah, it's so important. Like,
and people don't want to do the work. Again, going back to what we were saying earlier, they want the lazy, they want the easy, they want the fucking cheat sheet and the download and the, can you give me an example spec of some project you've done before? And it's like, fuck off, mate. No, I can't.
No.
Write one for your project and stop being a fucking idle bastard.
Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you a story around this, right? So I was doing a project. I got the schedule of works done. It was detailed, but not detailed enough.
Yeah.
I actually hired someone, paid him to prepare the schedule of works. Okay. And he turned up to me with not detailed enough. Okay. So what I did, what actually happened was, when I was buying the second fix, right, I was eventually responsible for buying the second fix. I get a call from the builder saying, can you buy, you know, the glue used to do the tiles. What is it called? I keep getting the name. The glue for the tiles.
Which, wall tiles?
Yeah, wall tiles.
Yeah, adhesive. Just
adhesive, tiles. Yeah.
Tile adhesive. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So he calls me up. He says, can you get me a few sacks of that?
Mm.
And I said, how much is that sack? He goes, 12 quid.
Yeah.
My time is not worth £12 an hour. My time is worth a few thousands. I leave my home to buy the guy two sacks, which is 24 quid or whatever. Took me an hour and a half of my time. And then he calls me the next day. Hear this out. This is funny. He calls me the next day. He goes, you've ordered a different kind of door handle and this doesn't fit. Can you buy me a door handle? How much is that damn handle? 60 quid. It's going to take me an hour and a half to buy one.
Yeah.
All right, so I said to him, I said, can I request you something? He goes, what? And I had a project manager as well. Now, this is the builder I'm speaking with, not the project manager. So I requested the builder directly. I said, go and buy this for me, and I'll pay you extra for your time invested in purchasing this. Every time you ask me for something, I'm going to request you to buy yourself. Just add that extra for your time investment of picking it up and ordering, and just bill me for it. And I kept doing that throughout, just because I had about 90% of the detail and not 100%. And that is a story for those who are listening.
Mate, I'll come and work for you all day long. Like, that's fucking Dream Street. When, you know, when people recognize that, that is amazing. What a great share that was. I want to share something with you as well. Something I often see on social media. People that are driving to B&Q 4 hours away to pick up a shower that's half price. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? But it's in the sale. It's in the sale in Northampton, and I live in Hull. And it's like, so you went all the way there to save 20 quid. It cost you 40 in fuel, a day to go. But it was in the sale. And I'm here to make more profit. I'm not here to piss money away and pay double in B&Q in Hull. And it's like, why? It's not just the price of the shower. You've got to factor in your time, just like what you were sharing about the adhesive there. Great share, mate.
Let me tell you something I learned a long time ago. A lot of people look at time as in, okay, let me save 20 quid or 30 quid or whatever it is, right? And they don't, it's almost like, think of it this way, okay? It's, if let's say a gardener is going to cost you 10 quid an hour, and you're going to go and do the garden, unless you love cutting grass, that's a different story. If you're going to spend an hour cutting grass, and that's going to cost you 10 quid for someone else to come and cut the grass for you, that's your time value. That's your time value. You've just valued your time at 10 pounds an hour.
Yeah.
If you want to become a real entrepreneur, investor, the first thing to learn is, where do you value your time? How much do you value your time? Mm-hmm. And when someone would ask me, okay, give me a one-to-one session, unless it is strategically planned in my business, I'm not going to give you an hour session for free. My 1 hour is worth a few thousands, because that's how much value I bring into my business when I invest that 1 hour into my business. And that's something, I mean, this is literally the first rule of business when people start out. And if they can learn how to implement that into their business, strategically front end, back end products, they will get to a point, because unless you don't, it's almost like, unless you don't act like the CEO, you're never going to become one.
That's right. Absolutely.
You need to act today. So if you learn to act like the CEO today and you value your time, what will happen at the back of that is people start to value your time and you get paid for that time.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think that's something most people, 90% of the people I know for sure, have absolutely no clue what is actually time worth to them.
They don't value it.
They don't value it.
And the worst ones, I think, I say the worst ones, the people that are most guilty of this are those that are still in employment. They're still in a job. So they believe that their employer's paying them to do their own refurb. That's the belief.
That's the belief,
yeah. But I'm getting a wage. Someone's paying me to do this. And it's like, mate, no. Value your time. What is your time worth? It's interesting. I'll share a story. I hope she listens to this, because she'll know I'm talking about her when I tell you this. So I had a lady that she came and did one of my training courses, and we went into this time calculation of what she was worth.
Yeah.
And it worked out that her business, an hour in her business, her value was 500 quid an hour. We did that work first, which was amazing for her to realize. And then we got talking about how she delivered her last project. And she said, well, I got a quote for the rip out, just stripping wallpaper. And they wanted £6,000, Paul. I went, all right. So what did you do? She said, well, I did it myself to save myself £6,000. And I was like, how long did it take you? She said, 3 weeks, but I saved 6K. I said, you do realize that's cost you about 20 grand. She was like, what? How are you working that out? I said, because your time's worth 500 quid an hour.
Yeah.
And if your time's worth 500 quid an hour, why didn't you put that energy into your business to be able to pay someone else to strip wallpaper? Yeah, and exactly. She was like, oh my God, like a head, you could see it go. it was an amazing and everybody in the room got the same benefit of seeing that as well.
Yeah.
But if you haven't worked out what you're worth, you can't carry out that exercise.
Can't carry out like that. No. I mean, one thing I learned, I mean, again, long time ago, is there is absolutely no way you can scale your business. Absolutely no way, unless you learn the value of your time.
Yeah.
And the kind of return on investment you make on your money in the as a resource in your business. Because if you're investing 100 grand and you know you're making 30, 40, 50%, then you know how much money you can potentially raise. And then at the back of that, how to scale your business. And at the back of that, it's almost like correlated to the value in your business as well. How much value, it's almost like the hourly value you bring into your own business. You mm-hmm. absolutely cannot scale your business. It's just not possible.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. So let's say someone hired a builder and they are going through pain with the builder. And now they want to change the builder. Let's say I come across this a lot.
Yeah.
How do you deal with a situation like that? I mean, I've actually heard some really, really horrific stories. How do you politely, diplomatically deal with a situation where, okay, how would you deal with that?
First and foremost, that would be the very, very, very last resort.
Yeah.
And I'd also be looking for taking responsibility. This is a huge thing that people say, oh, my builder's done this, my builder's shit, my builder's this, he's that and the other, he's overspent, he's gone over time, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. All the bullshit that I normally hear. And I say bullshit loosely.
Yeah, I get that.
Some people have had but genuine bad experiences. Yeah. But 99 times out of 100 in my experience, it's always down to a client failing in the engagement process.
Yeah, it is.
But if it does come to it where, you know, the relationship is dead, we've got to part ways, then what advice would I give? I would really, really, really reconsider doing it. It would be an absolute, like, last resort. Do not make this decision lightly. And I say that because for any other builder to come in afterwards, you will pay double, at least.
Yep.
And if you can even get another builder to come and do it.
Yep.
And here's the reason why. Like, if someone came to me and said, can you come and finish this builder's work? I won't do it. I just won't. But the reason for that is when I go there, let's say that this property investor's budget was, let's say it was a 30K job, and they've got 20K in, and they've had to part ways with the builder. Now, when I see how much work's been done, I can gauge how much of their budget's gone.
Yep.
So if they've spent 20K of a 30K job that's going to cost 40 to put right, I know I'm going to have a fucking horrible project because they can't afford me.
Yep.
And that alone creates further pain, further animosity, and not a relationship that I want to be in. So that's why I personally won't touch it.
You know, the funny thing is, one thing that clicked me, like, when you were sharing this, is just don't hire a builder. Remember, hiring a builder is like getting married.
Absolutely.
If you are speaking with your builder and you're not happy, and you can't jump in bed, not literally, but jump in bed with this guy, go and take more quotations, speak with more builders, and find one that you can be in bed with. Otherwise, don't, because you know, being married and you know, if you have an argument in the evening and you cannot remove, you know, keep your ego on side and still pick up the phone and say, hey Paul, you know, let's get this going. If you can't do that, then don't hire that builder.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I see a lot of posts from investors of top tips to hiring builders. And, you know, will you work into CDM regs? Show me your insurance. Can I go and see some other projects? Can I speak to your previous clients? I see all that and I get it. I genuinely get it. My one top tip for hiring builders is go with this. Go with your gut. Like, if your gut's screaming at you saying, do not go with this guy, then fucking don't. It's just like any other relationship. Like, that's, you can, like, if you was dating someone, right?
Yep.
And we're going to pick up the phone to the ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend and say, what were they like? You know, are they good in bed? Or you know, were they dicks when you went out? What were they like in front of your parents? And all those answers came back. You were still a bit, oh, I'm not sure. You wouldn't do it, would you? No. You wouldn't get in bed with them. But with builders, we still do that. We got references. They're insured. They seem to know what they're doing. I kind of had a look at the Facebook page, but they can start now and they're cheap. So let's do it. Like, you've got to take responsibility for that if that's what you're operating.
Yeah.
And being fucking honest with yourself when you do that. There's so many times when people go, I've hired the wrong builder, and we look into the detail. Like, we hired the cheapest, didn't you? And they go, no, I didn't. And I go, show me all the quotes then. And then it's tumbleweed comes past. And you absolutely went with the cheapest. Then you wonder why you got what you got. Like, you got told you not to do it and you still did it.
That is an amazing tip, not just hiring builders. I believe that applies to everything. Every time you take a decision, that always go with your gut feeling. And
accountant, broker, whoever it is.
The funny thing is, paradoxical, right? Which is, most of the times I go with my gut feeling, but sometimes I don't. And I'm still reflecting back, thinking why I don't, because maybe somewhere logically it made sense. But I'm with you on this. That is an amazing tip. I feel every time when you're making a decision, it's not about the references, it's not about the logical stuff on a spreadsheet that you look at. It's the gut feeling that you get, and that is major. And like I said, it's not just about how every damn decision you take in your business.
Absolutely. My coach calls it heart energy. And I think that's a great way of describing it.
Yeah.
You know, if that heart energy doesn't connect, then I'm out.
It doesn't work. Doesn't work. Yeah. You know what? Honestly, I've done many sessions and I can, you know, like, I have so much common with you. And I feel it's almost like the determination level, the honesty with yourself. I think I unfortunately speak with people who are not necessarily as honest with themselves, and it's almost like looking at yourself and saying, you know what, I don't need to bring my ego into this, or I don't need to be hiding my limitations or weaknesses. And I think when I look at you, and I'm just complimenting you that I see a person who's really, really honest and just really upfront with the way you do things. So you know, it's a pleasure, honestly, pleasure to have you speaking at our event and have you here.
Thank you, mate. Heart energy, mate. Heart energy.
Thank you. Okay. Before we go, before we conclude the session, for those who are watching this, Paul is speaking at our big event. We have one of the biggest online property events in the country, where we have all the prolific speakers speaking. And one of the reasons I brought Paul in, like I shared earlier, I can see through Paul, which is what I love about him. And you're going to absolutely love his content. I'm pretty sure when you watch this session, you would love this as well. But he's going to bring massive, massive value in the big event as well. So go and get your tickets. You'll see the link somewhere around this video, depending on where you're watching this video on. So go and get your tickets. We are bringing mega value. And we are here to serve, we are here to help. Paul, would you like to add anything?
No, all good, mate. Thanks for having me, much appreciated. I'm really, really looking forward to the event, speaking alongside all those amazing speakers that you've got lined up.
Amazing, yes.
Including me.
Thank you once again for watching. Go get your tickets, and we'll see you all on the other side.